That single second felt like how the world should be, and I wanted that feeling back. Wanted him back. We stood there until I felt cried out, and I straightened, wiping my eyes. We both leaned back on the bumper of her SUV. Tessa slung her arm around me. "Can you talk to me about something again?" I asked. "Literally anything. Just to keep my mind off it." "Sure," she said. "Question. Do you have a real crush on Ryan Chase, or just an oh he's so cute crush the way Morgan does?" Well, that took my mind off it. There didn't seem to be a point in totally denying it, so I just sighed and settled on a fib. "The latter. He's just nice and fun to talk to. Nothing else." Tessa opened her mouth to ask more, but I was saved by a familiar voice angrily calling out, "What the heck, you guys?" Morgan demanded. Kaylee was right beside her. "You just took off." We stood up and I looked at Morgan. Her voice went quiet.
"Oh no, what's wrong?"
"Jacob Rosenthal was at the game," Tessa said. Neither girl said a word, but they both winced, shoulders drooping. Before I could tell them I was fine, Morgan's arms engulfed me and Kaylee was right beside us, pulling Tessa in too. I could pick out their scents, the soft vanilla of Morgan's perfume and the floral of Kaylee's hair and the spearmint gum that Tess chewed any time we were outside of school. With our arms around each other, I almost believed that strength could travel between us, like the heat of our bodies. Nothing, not even sadness, could be greater than the sum of us. Chapter 11. "Don't let schooling get in the way of your education. Who said it?" Ms. Pepper asked, looking at us expectantly. Her in-class questions were like daily quiz bowl practice. We'd lost one match and won another since the first, but I hadn't lost my apprehension. The answer was Mark Twain. I was 99.9% sure. Of course, I'd never risk the 0.1% chance of being wrong in front of Ryan Chase. Even after 3 months of sharing a class with him, I still feared embarrassment at every turn. Seeing that no one else was going for it, Max, Mr. Quizbowl himself, answered from behind me. "It was Mark Twain." "Very nice, Max," she said. "For a bonus point, know any of his other quotes?" I turned to look at Max, glad it wasn't me on the spot. He gave me a quick, private smile before reciting, "A person who won't read has no advantage over one who can't read." Ms. Pepper raised her eyebrows. "Impressive. Anyone else?" To my surprise, Morgan's hand shot up. Ms. Pepper nodded at her. "Something like, when red-haired people are above a certain social class, they call it auburn," Morgan said, self-consciously touching the tips of her own red hair. "Excellent. And for the last point, does anyone know Mark Twain's real name?"
"Mark Twain,"
yelled Tyler, which elicited a few giggles. "Thank you for that, Mr. Roberts," Ms. Pepper said, "but no." I raised my hand before I could change my mind. "Samuel Clemens."
"Samuel Clemens indeed," she said, marking the bonus point down.
Max pushed my elbow with his index finger from behind me.
"Nice one, nerd."
I felt myself smile, even though it was a dorky thing to know, let alone share.
"I'm talking about Mark Twain," Ms. Pepper said, "because we finished Grendel a day early. Since this is an honors class, We will be cramming in another piece of literature today, and there'll be another assigned over the weekend. Everyone groaned. It was Friday, so this was especially cruel. I like your enthusiasm, Ms. Pepper said. So here's the plan. Today, we'll read one of Mark Twain's short stories in class and talk about it. Your assignment for the weekend is to read another one of Mark Twain's short stories, whichever one you want. On Monday, we'll have a short in-class writing assignment in which you'll draw from both texts. It might benefit you to read more than one short story, but only one is required. More groaning. Ms. Pepper deflated. Oh, come on, guys. Give Mark Twain a chance. He's actually really funny. By the time the bell rang, I had to agree with her. I was sort of excited to read another short story over the weekend. I had read Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, of course, but nothing else of his. Surprise assignments are the worst, Morgan said once we were in the hallway. She turned to Max. Paige has to plan ahead or she goes crazy. Max smiled.
She's already a little crazy.
I know,
Morgan smiled back as if I wasn't there. Hey, I said.
Love ya,
Morgan said, turning toward the hall.
See you in a few.
Max and I had gotten into the habit of walking together toward lunch and math class, respectively. Morgan always stopped at her locker on the other side of the building, so I was glad to have the company. Walking alone to class often made me think of Aaron. Would we still be together, holding hands in the hall? Sometimes, standing alone at my locker, I half expected to feel a little jab at my waist. Aaron used to come up behind me and poke my side just to watch me jump. We'd both laugh, and I'd push his shoulders if I was mad.
I like your friends,
Max announced. He'd gotten to know them a little better the weekend before. He invited us over to his house, along with a few other people, to watch scary movies and hand out Halloween candy. I was surprised at how well everyone got along, and thrilled that I had spent my Friday night with Ryan Chase, sneaking candy and bonding over a mutual hatred of Skittles. I eyed Max. I like my friends too. He rolled his eyes at me.
No, I mean, I guess I'm surprised by how much I like being around a group of girls.
Yes, that is shocking, teenage boy, I said, and Max laughed. I got this little buzz every time I made Max laugh. His eyebrows shot up in tandem with every grin, like he was perpetually surprised that I could amuse him.
They were the girls I went to elementary school with, but I never thought I'd be able to talk to them like friends. They're really easy to talk to.
Yeah, they're good like that.
I already knew I liked Tessa, but Kaylee is just cool, he said. And Morgan. I mean, she looks like
a ginger 1950s housewife, I guessed. He laughed again, eyebrows lifting.
Yeah, but then she rattles off feminist ideology in her prim voice. It's awesome.
I nodded. She's wanted to major in women's studies since we were like 10.
How does that work exactly? Isn't she, she's religious, right?
Yeah. She believes in personal freedom, God, and true love, in that order, I said, quoting Morgan's oft-repeated explanation.
That sounds about right, Max said. Considering that in history class yesterday, she raised her hand to politely suggest that the teacher was slut-shaming Anne Boleyn.
Ha! Only Morgan would defend a known mistress.
Anyway,
Max said as we reached the point where our paths diverged.
Ryan and I were talking about catching a movie tonight. If you want to come, you...
Yes, sure. I didn't even bother to ask which movie.
Cool, he said. I'll tell Tessa in math. You should invite Kaylee and Morgan if they're around. I'll text you later.
I was jittery for the rest of the day, running my wardrobe through my mind. All that stood in my way was a cute outfit, and my mother. After school, I mentioned it to her casually. "This is a bit last minute," she said, sighing. I regretted telling her that it was a group of people. If I had said I was going with Tessa, she wouldn't have blinked. Now she wanted to know the names of everyone going. What are parents looking for when they ask for that information? Is there a secret list of bad kids passed out like a phone tree? I rattled off a few names in one breath, hoping none of them would stick in her memory. "Are you dating one of these people?" she asked, arching an eyebrow. "No," I said hotly. "Ugh, Mom, seriously." "Well, how would I know? You never talk about boys to me anymore." It was an offhand comment, but she paused when she realized its implication. I hadn't talked to her about boys since Aaron. She cleared her throat. "You can go. Just be home by 10. Mom, the movie starts at 8. With previews, I don't even know when it'll be over." I was about 3 seconds from throwing my trump card. If you're allowed to date Dad, I'm allowed to stay out until 11. "Fine," she said, looking back down at her magazine. "Then 10:30. The later you're out, the more people are leaving bars and driving drunk." I gave her an eye roll so extended that Cameron would have been proud. "At least give me 11. "You have to be at your grandmother's early tomorrow. 10:30 is my final offer." "Fine," I said, turning my back so she couldn't see my follow-up eye roll. I considered fighting her on this, telling her that Dad would totally let me stay out. Unfortunately, pitting them against each other, the one perk of being a divorce kid, was useless these days. At 7:30, I heard a honk in my driveway, but I was surprised to find Max's SUV instead of Tessa's. I glanced back at the house, hoping my mom wouldn't look out the window. She would probably come out and grill Max about his driving record and intentions. I climbed in the back seat and shut the door behind me. "Hey, what's going on?" Tess glanced back at me. "We decided to carpool. Max was over at my house anyway. We had a math project."
"That we were using as an excuse to watch Mystery Science Theater," Max said.
Their connection made sense to me. Tessa couldn't stand to be around anyone who was trying too hard, and Max was never trying to be anyone he wasn't. And I could see how he'd gravitate toward Tessa, who loved music and yoga as passionately as he loved trivia and cult-favorite sci-fi and who knows what else. I hoped we were picking Ryan up too, but Max drove us straight to the theater. I could barely hear him and Tessa talking over the radio as they discussed the many merits of Ryan Adams' music.
"I mean," Max said as he parked the car, "I'm usually not much for cover songs, but his cover of Wonderwall," Tessa finished. I know, almost as good as the original." "I actually think it's better," Max said, unbuckling his seatbelt. "Janie, what do you think?"
"The cover's better," I said. And it was, sadder than the original, full of longing.
"Don't listen to her," Tessa said.
When I made a face, she added, "I'm sorry, Paige, but you listen to girl pop anthems, not ironically."
"Hey," I said, "you have every Lila Montgomery song on your iPod."
"That's different. She writes her own music and it's folk-inspired."
"Some pop anthems are well-written," Max offered, and I looked at Tessa like, ha.
When we walked into the theater, Ryan was already waiting with Morgan, who looked starstruck by his presence. I had to remind myself that Morgan didn't like Ryan, at least not any more than she liked every other cute guy in school. Kaylee was out with Eric, of course, though none of us was sure why they couldn't come to the movie with us.
"Hey," Ryan said, spreading his arms open. "My other two dates. Thanks for dropping them off, Max. See you later."
Tessa stepped past him. His eyes followed her and he called out, "I know you love me, Tessa."
I hoped his affection toward her was only joking between friends. She certainly wasn't interested in him and he probably wasn't used to that. I made a mental note that I should try to play hard to get, if I ever had the opportunity. While everyone stood in line for snacks, I leaned against the nearest railing, my appetite suddenly absent. Other than Alcott's, a decrepit bowling alley, and the frozen yogurt shop, Cinema 12 was all Oakhurst had in the way of hangouts. It opened when we were in junior high, with high-tech screens, a deluxe snack counter, and even a small arcade area. I'd spent countless nights there, giggling with my friends in the dark theater. My eyes wandered to the arcade area, which was usually filled with unruly little kids. I blinked, a memory fluttering into my mind before I could push it out. When I opened my eyes, I could almost see Aaron there, relentlessly maneuvering the claw machine, just a week before he was gone for good. The air was that sticky July hot, and I was sunburned from a long day at the pool. The icy air conditioning of the theater felt like a salve against my skin. Aaron's dad had dropped us off, and for some reason Aaron set his sights on a stuffed cat in the claw machine. He must have spent $5 in quarters, determined to win it for me, and we missed the beginning of the movie. But when that claw finally grasped the cat's plush head, he grinned in triumph.
"I got it on my first try," he announced to everyone in earshot, even though it was an obvious lie to anyone who'd seen him there for half an hour straight.
He presented the stuffed cat to me with bravado. I didn't even really like cats, but I liked Aaron. I liked the mischievous glint in his brown eyes, his throaty laugh, and the easy way he could turn anything ordinary into an event, so that somehow, a wait in the movie theater lobby became a battle with a claw machine.
"Hey,"
Tessa whispered, standing close so that her shoulder touched mine. Her arms were stuffed full with a jumbo popcorn, snow caps, and a soft drink as big as her head.
"Hey,"
I said, snapping back into the present. Her eyes traveled the length of my face.
"You good?"
"Yeah." There were weeks, months even, when these memories would have dissolved me. When I would have curled up in bed, my mind battling this impossible question. How could someone be here one day and be gone forever the next? The question held me to the ground, demanding answers, and I still had none. But I did have a group of friends, laughing together and waiting by the theater door. Waiting for me.
"You coming or what, Hancock?" Ryan Chase hollered at me.
Around us, grown-ups turned to frown at his unnecessary volume. His grin broke through the cloud of sad memories and I stepped forward. I tried to hang back as we entered the dark theater so that I was strategically sitting between Ryan and Tessa. This was fine anyway, since Max and Tessa were still talking music. Morgan sat on Max's other side, settling in with her junior mints.
"Hey, man,"
Ryan called toward the entrance. Tyler Roberts was walking in our direction, decked out in his leather jacket.
"Over here."
"What's up, everyone?"
Tyler said, taking a seat on the end of the row next to Morgan.
"Sorry I'm late."
Tessa and I waved to him as the theater went dark. The first preview began, the surround sound crackling to life with the jaunty melody of an animated film.
"Is it cool if I sit here?"
Tyler was asking Morgan.
"Not waiting for another guy or something?"
"Nope," Morgan said, giggling at nothing.
"Cool,"
he told her.
"I'd sit on the other side next to Chase, but people might think we're on a date."
Morgan's laughter stopped.
"And what's wrong with that?"
Nothing, Tyler said. Except that I'm way out of his league. I mean, he's a good-looking guy, but come on.
Shh, someone hissed from a row behind us. Yeah, Paige, Max said, his voice too loud. He looked over at me, bringing a finger to his lips.
Shh.
I could feel every head turning to look at me. Between us, Tessa muffled a laugh. My face burned as I whispered back, I'm not even talking. Max grinned, leaning back in his seat. The next preview began, touting a new rom-com out at Christmas.
Oh my God,
Morgan said, her eyes transfixed on the screen. She spoke loudly enough that we could all hear her.
This looks so good, I'm totally going to see this.
Max gave Morgan a thumbs down, and Ryan feigned loud snoring noises, which prompted another outburst from behind us.
Quiet down there!
A voice bellowed from the back.
For the last time, Paige Hancock, Max said loudly, turning to me again.
He was doing this on purpose.
Pipe down.
Ryan and Morgan snickered over their popcorn as I sank down in my seat, face aflame. Max's face, however, was downright gleeful. Tessa patted my knee, but I could tell she was holding her breath to keep from laughing. As the movie began, another feeling replaced my mortification. Surprise. Someone other than my best friends had given me a hard time, embarrassed me even. And other people laughed. It had been so long since anyone had done that. Everyone had been treating me like a porcelain doll, with sad eyes painted on her unmoving face. They were so careful not to break me, tiptoeing around the fault lines caused by Aaron's death. Not Max. He got close enough to poke at me, to nudge me out of my comfort zone. I wondered, of course I wondered, if he knew about Aaron. I still couldn't tell, but I desperately hoped that he didn't. Maybe he'd never heard because he was still at Coventry, and maybe Ryan never mentioned it. Eventually, I forced my attention toward the movie in front of me. In the past year, I had streamed nearly every movie and TV series available online. Sometimes, when the credits rolled, I felt almost sick with dread that I had to return to real life. But that night, when the lights went up, I didn't feel the overpowering urge to stay planted in the seat. I wasn't desperate to keep living in a character's contained, well-lit world. I stretched my arms as we filed out of our row. Very funny, jerk, I said to Max when we were in the lobby of the theater, batting his arm. Max shook his head but couldn't keep the grin off his face.
You should really learn to use your inside voice.
Tessa had peeled off to use the bathroom, and she returned in a flurry.
You guys,
she said. This was the most excited I'd seen her since Thelonious and Sons announced their U.S. tour.
There's a Rocky Horror Picture Show happening here tonight.
Tessa had a bizarre and long-standing love for Rocky. I found it creepily sexual, and the audience participation factor made me squirm.
Ryan said. What is that?
Tessa's jaw dropped.
Only, like, the most amazing interactive experience you could ever possibly have?
It's creepy, I told Ryan.
Can we stay for it?
Tessa was all out pleading to everyone. Since Max drove us, she had no way of getting home. But there's no way my mom would let me. Tessa knew that.
Please, it starts in half an hour.
I'll stay.
Ryan shrugged, and Tyler nodded, saying,
I'll see what it's all about.
Crap, I thought. I'd rather sacrifice my DVD collection to the volcano gods than let Ryan Chase know that my mother treats me like a child. I should get home. I've got stuff going on early tomorrow. I lied. So I'll just ride home with you, Morgan.
Oh, I
She trailed off, glancing over at Tyler.
I was gonna stay, but I could run you home real quick.
I hated my mother. For the first time in my life, I considered not going home, just texting her that I was staying out late, too bad.
I'll take you, Max said from behind us.
No, I'll just call my mom, really, I... He held up his hand, twirling his keys around one finger.
Janie, it's no big deal.
I pushed my bangs off my face. I mean, if you're sure you don't mind.
I don't,
he said, and then added in a lower voice.
Please get me out of here. Rocky R scares the hell out of me.
I smiled genuinely, and he called out,
Hey, Rye.
Ryan glanced up at us from his conversation with Tyler. Max pointed at him.
Can you take Tessa home? Sure, Ryan said.
Tessa nodded at us, waving. I called my goodbyes to everyone and followed Max toward the exit. As we walked to the car, I looked over my shoulder back into the theater lobby. They were already talking again, Morgan's head thrown back in laughter at something Tyler said. Now it was a double date, and I was so not on it. Inside the car, I pulled my phone out of my purse and pushed the power button.
What's with the mood, dude?
Max asked as he turned on the engine. I sighed again as we pulled out of the parking lot. It's just that my mom is so lame about my curfew. When I get home, my dad's gonna be there anyway and they'll stay up late, and yet I have to be home now. It's so unfair. I glanced down at my phone. 9 missed calls. Mom. Mom. Dad. Cam. Dad. I stopped scrolling as my heart throbbed in panic. Max had only picked me up 3 hours ago. My phone had been off in the theater. The only text said,
Call when you get this.
From my dad. I couldn't bear to listen to the 3 messages, so I dialed, hands shaking.
Is everything okay?
Max asked, glancing over at me. I don't know. My dad's phone was ringing. Once, twice, 3 times.
Paige?
Dad, what's going on?
Paige, honey, he said. Your grandmother had a stroke.
The word reverberated against my brain. Stroke, 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 colliding with any neurons that would have otherwise helped me process the word. My lower lip trembled and my vision tunneled around me, all sense of time and space lost. What? I could hear my own voice in my ears, choked and childlike.
She's doing all right, he continued, but it's too soon to tell what damage has been done.
My throat restricted and I gasped for air to compensate.
It's okay, kiddo. We're all here at the hospital with her, and I'm going to come get you now.
Okay, I breathed. My whole world went blurry, like I wasn't fully inhabiting my body.
Pager, listen to me,
my dad said.
It'll be all right. I'll be there as soon as I can.
The line went dead. This situation didn't necessitate a goodbye. In fact, goodbye was the absolute last word I wanted to hear.
Paige?
Max asked quietly. I could feel him looking between me and the road ahead of us. I moved my lips, forcing them to form the words. I held up my phone as if it were some sort of explanation. My grandma had a stroke. She's alive, but I don't know. My family's at the hospital. My voice cracked twice as I said it. Speaking the words out loud, having to tell someone else, made it real. My eyes filled with tears even as I begged them to remain dry. I covered my face even though I still held my phone in one hand, embarrassed and exposed.
Listen, Paige,
Max said.
I'm sure it's going to be okay.
She's already at the hospital, and medical technology is so advanced when it comes to strokes. Call your dad back, find out which hospital, and tell him I'm driving you now. Before I could even attempt to protest, he made a U-turn back toward the highway. I wiped at my wet face, nodding. That's what I needed, to be with my family immediately, to see my grandma, to know that she was okay. I quickly dialed my dad's cell phone number. Dad, I croaked. My friend Max is bringing me now, okay? We were mostly quiet during the drive to the hospital. I wasn't even really thinking, just staring out the window at nothing as tears kept slipping out. It was late November, and the trees were finally bare. I hadn't noticed until now how sullen they looked. At one point, Max said,
"It might help if you take deep breaths and let them out slowly. The oxygen expands your bronchioles, which will activate your parasympathetic nervous system and slow your heart rate."
Using science to comfort me. I wanted to tease him for it, but I was too busy holding my breath and letting it out slowly. As soon as the tires hit the parking lot, I called my dad and he described how to get to the waiting room. I unhooked my seatbelt, nearly bailing out of the car before it had come to a full stop. I could see my quick breaths in the air, but I couldn't feel the cold. I was already numb. Max leaned across the seat.
"Do you want me to stay?"
"No, I'm okay." I glanced back at him across the car. "Could you not tell anyone about this?" Even though my paramount concern was, of course, my grandma, I still couldn't shake the thought of Max relaying my embarrassing meltdown to Ryan Chase.
"Of course I won't. Promise," he said.
I nodded and shut the door behind me, bolting toward the hospital. It felt, however, foolishly like everything would be okay if I could just get to her. She looked so small in the hospital bed. I wished she could hear my thoughts through her drugged slumber. "I'm going to apply for screenwriting school, Grammy. Get better so I can tell you all about it." The little room closed in around us, too many machines looming against the walls. I wasn't used to my grandmother being silent or still. An oxygen tube curled across her cheeks under her nose. After almost 2 hours of sitting in the room, I was beginning to feel like I needed some extra air myself. My mom was in a chair next to the bed, her hand clasping my grandmother's. Her head rested on the bed, and I couldn't tell if she was even awake. Cameron was curled up in a seat, texting or playing a game on her phone. My dad was pacing around the room, unable to stop moving. Since I'd arrived, he'd left at least 6 times, going for more coffee or to the bathroom, or to find the doctor for another question he'd come up with. The doctor had no answers. We just had to wait for her to wake up. It was too much for me, the pacing and the machines and the beeping. I pointed out into the hallway, gesturing to my dad that I would be outside. I teetered out of the room, running my hand along the wall to steady myself. The hallway felt just as stifling as the little room where my grandmother lay sleeping. I glanced around at the hospital, struck by its drab walls and antiseptic smell. Only a shock of blonde hair stood out in the colorless hallway. It belonged to a tiny, familiar form, seated on a bench with her elbows propped on her knees. "Tess?" She looked up and, seeing me, leaped off the bench toward me. She grasped both my arms. "Is she okay?" she asked. Wait, I sputtered. "How did you know I was here?" "Max came and got me."
"You left Rocky Horror?"
"Yeah," she said.
"Are you okay? Is your grandma okay?"
"But you didn't have your car."
"Max took me to get it," she said impatiently. "Is she okay?" She's stable. Okay for now, I told her, so relieved to have her in front of me. Her presence made the hospital less foreign. And fine. Good, Tessa nodded. She eased her grip on my arms. Good. You left Rocky for me. She lagged her head to the side. Of course I did. My lower lip wavered, fresh tears forming. Tessa lived through losing Aaron right beside me. It seemed unfair that she was always the one supporting me. Her life would have been so much lighter if it weren't entwined with mine. So, Tessa said, is there a plan? My mom's gonna stay. I gestured back at the room, and I think my dad wants to stay with her. Do you want to go home? I can take you. I want to stay, but my dad said earlier that he was going to take Cam and me back. I don't think he wants us to be here if they get bad news. Tessa winced. Do you want to stay longer, or do you want me to take you back now? I can do whatever. Let me check with my dad. Tessa walked back with me and stood outside the room. Cameron was curled up with a pillow on the ledge by the window, nodding off. She looked so harmless this way, like when she was a baby. When I nudged her arm, she startled awake with the same childlike expression of sleepiness. My dad stood up, gesturing for me to move toward the hallway. He hugged Cameron and me at the same time, his arms stretching wide to fit both of us into one embrace.
It'll be okay, he said for the 100th time that night. Go home and get some sleep.
Cameron opened her mouth to say something, but my dad cut her off.
I'll call you if anything changes, he said.
But what if Mom... I began. He clasped my shoulders firmly, quieting my question.
I'll be with her the whole time, he said.
I nodded. It was strange, letting go of my worries about my mother to my father, of all people.
Thanks, Tessie, my dad said over our heads. Call my cell if you girls need anything.
I watched as my dad walked back into the room, settling in for a long night of watching my mother sleep. He sat in the chair, no longer pacing, staying steady for her now. Maybe this was how it was supposed to be. Tessa grasped my hand as we turned to exit. She put her other arm over Cameron's shoulder, guiding us both toward home. Chapter 12. When Tess and I arrived at school on Monday, I hesitated before getting out of the car. My grandmother had woken up over the weekend, but the doctors were still running tests and monitoring her. My dad stayed with my mom at all times, and it was strange to be home without them. I'd always envied Tessa's parentless lifestyle, but not like this. This felt lonely and hollow. Tessa stayed over all weekend, leaving only to shower and grab more clothes. I wasn't sure how it had turned out this way, that Tessa, who was less than a year older than me, became my guardian in times of emergency. She was quiet now, waiting for a cue from me. As I pushed the car door open, biting wind hit my face.
If you change your mind, I can take you home at lunch, she said. Or before. I'll just cut class.
I know, I said. My dad had already called the office to excuse me if I felt I needed to leave. But school provided a welcome distraction with my familiar routine of classes. I couldn't bear to be alone, at home, in the silence. People bustled into the doors beside us, but it all looked different to me now, like the world shouldn't be moving on while my grandmother lay in that hospital bed. As I made my way down the hall, my eyes found Max.
He stood in front of my locker, searching the approaching crowd. I saw him before he saw me. I felt myself smile at the familiarity of him. Dark mop of hair and the shirt cuffs jammed up his forearms, like an exasperated young professor.
"Paige," he said, straightening up.
This unsettled me, hearing him use my actual first name.
"Is your grandma okay?"
"She's fine for now. And I..."
"Good, because I was going to text you, but I didn't want to interrupt whatever was going on with your family, and I just wanted to apologize because I know I said I wouldn't tell anyone, but I thought..."
My hand almost moved to his chest as an effort to calm him, but I hesitated. "Max."
"Yeah?"
He blinked, green eyes like mine behind the rectangular frames of his glasses. "Thank you. For driving me and for knowing to go back and get Tessa."
"Oh."
He stared at his omnipresent Converse.
"No big deal."
It was to me. When he glanced back at me, his expression had relaxed.
"So, how are you doing?"
I considered my usual refrain, the almost convincing chorus of "I'm fine." But my mind flashed backward to our driveway conversations. It was a little late for pretense. "I don't know." He looked so genuinely sad for me, but it wasn't pity or that look. He chewed on his thumbnail as if racking his brain for a solution to this equation. But life is not evens and odds and solving for X. And sadness? Sadness is an equation made of all variables. I realized then that Max Watson and I were staring at each other, not speaking, amid one of the busiest hallways in the school. And almost everyone was looking at us as they walked by, gawking at the intensity of our conversation.
"Hey,"
a deep voice said, and I felt a hand on my arm.
"How's she doing?"
I turned to Ryan, nodding. "Better. The doctors are hopeful."
"Oh, that's great."
The creases formed at the sides of his eyes, but the blue of them still sparkled through.
"I'm so glad."
I tried on a smile, glancing from Ryan to Max. "Well, I guess I'll see you in English." As I walked away, a lump rose in my throat. Max and Ryan didn't look related, but they must have shared a gene that made them unabashedly kind. I felt so lucky to be on the receiving end of it. I'd never really been friends with guys before, especially not with two guys who would seek me out to check on me. I ducked into the bathroom on my way to my first class to double-check my makeup. My eyes were still a little bloodshot from crying so much the night before, but at least I was smudge-free. On the way out, my upper body collided with someone coming out of the boys' bathroom. "Oof," I muttered, stepping back. When I opened my eyes, Clark Driscoll's eyes were on mine.
"Hey, Paige," he said. "Sorry about that."
"No, it was my fault I wasn't looking." I remembered the puffed-up jerk he used to be, the guy who picked on kids like Max. But I couldn't see even a glimmer of that guy in the Clark Driscoll that stood in front of me. The purplish shadows under his eyes made his skin look sallow.
"Rough morning?"
he asked. His voice was quiet, carried across the desert landscape of sadness that we both knew too well. I'd been fighting my way out of this wasteland, but Clark, it seemed, had made a home there. "Yeah," I said, "you could say that."
"I have bad days with it too."
He said this with such softness that I realized he thought I was upset about Aaron. He delivered his brief eulogy for Aaron the same way. Resigned and with a crack in his voice. It was, then and now, like watching a wild beast, too grief-stricken to protect himself, rolling over to expose a soft underbelly. And feel guilty when you have good days. This popped out of my mouth, unscripted. I would have been horrified if he hadn't given me a wistful smile.
Every time, he said.
Then he looked away like he'd said too much.
See ya.
The day dragged as my thoughts lingered on my grandmother and my mother, but I stayed at school. Months before, my encounter with Clark would have deepened my sadness. Instead, that day, it reminded me that I'd survived worse. I could be strong for my grandmother because I knew what it meant to be strong now. That's something I couldn't have said last year. The left side of Grammy's face does droop a little and she'll need to rest more, my mother explained later in the week. My dad sat beside her, their hands linked. But other than that, things won't be that different. Just physical therapy, some medical equipment in her apartment, and the nurses will be there more often, monitoring everything. But, I said, swallowing hard, I'd been worrying about what I was going to ask for the past week, but I needed to know. Of course, I shouldn't have Googled stroke complications, but I was nothing if not a worst-case scenario kind of girl. Now that she's had one stroke, isn't it likely that she'll have another one?
Maybe, my mother said, her expression falling. My dad jumped in. Maybe not.
Cameron was sitting next to me at the kitchen table, her hands fidgeting in her lap. So that's all that will change? She's mostly okay? Cameron asked. My mother nodded. She'll probably be a lot more tired, between new medicines and trying to recover, but yes, everything should be fine.
When can we go see her?
As soon as she's settled again, my mother told me.
But she knows that you are thinking about her.
With all the worry surrounding my grandma, I almost forgot about our quiz bowl match against Coventry. I'd made myself flashcards for all kinds of subjects, but I still felt unprepared. Max drove me to the away match and I read our practice questions the whole way. The Coventry school was beautiful inside, small but stately. We were in a classroom that smelled like polished wood and chalk, without Oakhurst's gross undertones of industrial cleaner and mold spores. I watched Max greet the Coventry team, who all wore the standard school uniform and seemed thrilled to see him. No one was more thrilled than a girl with a platinum blonde pixie cut. She launched herself into Max's arms, hugging him tightly. She grinned as they talked, adjusting her glasses, and I smiled at the idea of Max having a nerd girl counterpart. When she took her place at Coventry's table, her nameplate read, Nicolette. Different, but beautiful. Fitting. Coventry took us to task in the first round. Nicolette answered three questions, two of which I didn't know the answer to. But in the second round, Max came alive. Even though he answered each question almost apologetically, he racked up dozens of points against his former team. The energy caught on, and soon Lauren and Malcolm lobbed a few correct answers of their own. The third round meant choosing one of four topics. We'd be asked 10 questions based around that topic. And we got to pick before Coventry.
Okay, Max said, whispering as he leaned in. I think we could do well with the Bay of Pigs or voter rights one. But here's the thing. If we don't take the music from the movie's 1980s category, Coventry will. And believe me, Nick and James won't miss a single one.
The three of them looked at me. The stress of my grandma's stroke wore down on me, but somewhere in between exhaustion and resignation, I felt devil may care like I had nothing to lose.
Pickett. Are you sure?
Lauren asked, nearly glaring at me.
You need to be sure, because we'd do well with the other two.
I'm sure. I thought back to all the times I'd raided my mom's DVD collection to watch those movies, snickering at the hairstyles and clothing choices. When we were little, Cameron and I sang along and mimicked trademark dance moves. I'd been unknowingly studying this pop culture topic for years. Max articulated our choice and the questions began. I didn't need to consult my teammates. I rattled off the answers without overthinking for once. I didn't even realize when I'd answered the 10th question. I sat poised, waiting for the next.
"That's all of them," Ms. Pepper said. She was moderating the match, but failing to moderate her grin. "All 100 points, plus the 20-point bonus for getting them all correct."
Malcolm slapped my back and Lauren gave me a prim smile. I leaned back in my chair, proud and relieved. Max knocked his knee into mine under the table. A quiet "I told you so." We won, narrowly, which meant we actually needed my third round cleanup. After the match, our team went right back to mingling with Coventry, as if we'd been seeing a movie together instead of competing. Max was catching up with his Coventry advisor, while Malcolm and even Lauren chatted with the other team. I stood back a bit, not sure where I fit in.
"So," Ms. Pepper said from beside me, "are you liking Quiz Bowl so far?"
"I am," I said. "It's nerve-wracking, but it's also an adrenaline rush." I recognized my moment. We stood away from the crowd where no one could overhear. I wanted to ask you," I said, already bumbling. "I'm applying for a summer writing program and was hoping maybe you'd write a recommendation letter for me."
Ms. Pepper all out beamed. "I'd love to. What program?"
"It's, screenwriting, actually," I said, "at NYU. I mean, I probably won't get in, but I'm applying."
"That's fantastic," she said. "Just email me the contact info and I'll send in a recommendation right away. When will you find out?"
"Not until the spring," I said. She turned to me fully.
"You know, I've been trying to convince the school to let me teach a creative writing class next year. Do you think you'd be interested in that?"
"Yeah, definitely."
"Janie," Max called, leaning back from his conversation to make eye contact with me. "You ready to go?"
I nodded, then glanced at Ms. Pepper. "He's my ride."
"Ah."
Her eyes were on Max.
"If you don't mind me asking, why does he call you Janie?"
"It's stupid," I told her, unsure of how I could possibly explain the nickname's origin. But she still looked at me, waiting. A stupid Pride and Prejudice reference. She smirked and tilted her head, trying to get a different perspective of me.
"He thinks you're a Jane, huh? Interesting."
"I'm not, though," I said. "I'm an Elizabeth." Her mouth formed a knowing smile.
"Well, we're all Elizabeths, I suppose, when we need to be."
I opened my mouth to ask what she meant, but Max came up to us, keys in hand. We grabbed our coats and I took one last glance at Ms. Pepper, hoping for a hint. She smiled, shaking her head ever so slightly, as I left with Max. When we were out the classroom door, I asked him, "So, do you miss Coventry?"
"Nah," he shrugged. "I mean a little, but I'm glad I'm at Oakhurst."
"Well, it seems like they miss you, especially Nicolette." I raised my eyebrows suggestively, poking his arm.
"I think she likes you." "Yeah, we went out a few times at the end of summer."
This shocked me away from my juvenile grin. I'd never pictured Max as someone's boyfriend. He was Max.
"I ended things. It wasn't a big deal and we're still friends, obviously."
I studied him now, imagining him on a date with Nicolette. "Did you end it because you were leaving Coventry?"
"Partially, yeah."
He frowned, but didn't elaborate. I had to know more, but a voice called,
"Hey, Paige and Max!"
We turned to see Malcolm at the door, waving his arm widely. Lauren was beside him, arms crossed over her peacoat. They met up with us beside Max's car.
"Do you guys want to go get ice cream? We were going to stop on the way home."
Malcolm smiled brightly, balancing, as always, Lauren's stoicism.
"Ice cream?" I asked with a little laugh. "That's an intuitive choice on this frigid night."
The look on Lauren's face wasn't exactly annoyed. Formal as she was, Lauren could only look cross. Or vexed.
"I like peppermint ice cream. It's a seasonal flavor at Kemper's owing to peppermint's association with Christmas. It only became available this week."
My comment seemed like pretty basic sarcasm, so I wasn't sure if I should apologize or explain myself. Instead, I stood there with my mouth opening and closing like a guppy. Max looked down at me.
"Sounds good, yeah?"
I nodded, then spent the car ride trying to guess Max's favorite ice cream flavor. Coffee, as it turned out, with hot fudge. Malcolm got dark chocolate ice cream with marshmallow topping. The sight of the butter pecan ice cream made me think of my grandmother. I was out with friends, indulging, and she was in physical therapy every day. So I got one scoop of butter pecan, an act of sugary solidarity, and one of black raspberry chip, which I'd always wondered about. When Lauren ate the first spoonful of her peppermint ice cream, she sighed contentedly. We sat at a little parlor table, and at one point Malcolm made me laugh so hard that I almost dribbled ice cream out of my mouth.
"So, black raspberry chip," Max said on our way out. "That's your favorite?"
"Well, it was really good," I said. "I only got it because I'd never tried it before, but I don't know if it's my favorite. I think I'd have to taste them all to be sure."
"Look at you," he said. "Beginner's minding your ice cream selections."
A few weeks before, I'd mentioned beginner's mind to him accidentally, and I'd fumbled through an explanation. It was hard to explain without mentioning Aaron, but I still didn't want to bring him up with Max. We'd become friends on the other side of tragedy, and he only knew the girl I was now.
"We should all come here again after the next match," Max said. "You can sample everything you've never tried before."
Malcolm honked on his way out of the parking lot, and Lauren raised her hand in a slight wave from the passenger seat. We waved back, and I smiled a little to myself. The four of us didn't necessarily have a lot in common, but they made me feel like one of them. And they made me laugh. Even Lauren. When I joined Quiz Bowl, I hadn't expected to like it so much. But then, that's the sweetness of trying something new.
Chapter 13. I stared out the front window, breathing against the cold glass, as a black Jeep appeared on my street. In the past few months, we had all hung out together a number of times, but it was always Max who picked me up if Tessa couldn't. Not that I minded. Max was punctual and never complained about having to cart me around. But tonight, I was climbing into the passenger seat of Ryan Chase's Jeep. Tessa was coming to Alcott straight from yoga class, and Max would be late, too. "Hey," I said, clicking my seatbelt into place.
"Hey,"
Ryan Chase said, and smiled at me as he backed out of the driveway. "Thanks for picking me up." I figured I would get the precursory gratitude out of the way, so we could talk about more important things. Like the two of us dating, for example.
"No problem."
There were a few beats of silence as we pulled out onto the main road. Now that we knew each other a little and had some mutual friends, our conversation would probably come much more easily. My mind flashed back to the talking about hot dogs incident, and I shuddered. "So," I said, resting my hands in my lap, "where is Max anyway?"
"Babysitting."
babysitting? Max had only told me that he was meeting up